Well, today on Rethink Real Estate, I'm excited to share the journey of Rachel Ashley. Rachel is one of our superstars. And what I mean by that is that it's a complete journey of real estate that she's going to share with you today, but also a case study on an incredibly successful auction that she had just done. Again, it is absolute proof of the process in every way, shape, and form, but so is Rachel's career. And again, not taking any credit away because she has done all of the hard work, but using auction from an early stage of her career to build a business that is repeat and referral, but then using auction recently to have 25 registered bidders. She was representing 10 of them, allowing auction to really take the marketplace and speak, but then also in that process, collecting 167 names and getting a great deal of business for the future out of it. So again, hopefully you can absolutely appreciate the journey, but also hopefully this episode helps. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Rachel.
Yes.
Welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Thank you.
So I've had to be patient with you. Do you not like doing this stuff?
No, I don't mind it. Just last year, I didn't want to do it. And this year, I'm fine with doing it. So,
because you've had a ripping first quarter.
Had a better year this year. If you asked me the year before last, I probably would have said yes. But last year, I was just, it was a hard no.
Can I ask, let's just dive into that first of all. So why did you feel like, I know you and I went through it a little bit and you felt a little bit more of imposter syndrome from a perspective of if you were on the podcast and you didn't have a great year, but realistically you'd had some brilliant years leading up to that. Like what was it about you last year that was different?
Yeah, I think it was probably my own ego getting in the way because I've done enough auctions. I know the process. You know that I love the process. So I think it was really just last year being like, well, I haven't listed or sold anything with auctions. So why would you want me to come on here and talk about it when there's other agents that had last year? So,
yep. Well, I guess that primarily the agents that we have on here aren't massive auction agents. We've got agents that are external to the Harcourts network that only done one or two or whatever it may be. But last year, from your perspective, was it a good or bad year in general?
Bad. In my perspective, it was bad.
Okay. So what's been the change this year? Because your first quarter is just like, I mean, again, I don't want to give anything away from everybody, but it's just been amazing. You were six for the network, like, and again, and it's not the one thing like, it's like, oh, well, did she have one big sale? Absolutely not. There's just been a multitude of transactions. Like it's just been really, it's really been fun to watch, to be honest, Rach.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. I want to continue it for the rest of the year. So that's
So what's the difference to the beginning of this year?
I think the biggest difference is probably my mindset and just my mental health around it. I think I'm, and probably a lot of people would realize this, or maybe for some people it's not this way, but I find being in sales when there's something in your own personal life that is affecting your ability to be excited about the day or be excited to go into the work environment, that's what affected me. I wasn't. Wow. It was just stuff happening in my own life that was pulling me away from being able to wake up really excited about work.
Truthfully. That's interesting because, you know, a lot of people like to compartmentalize, like they say that if I'm doing well at work, then my personal life is going to crap, you know, or if my personal life is great, I'm distracted away from work, certainly in the basis of what we're doing here. So that's interesting to see that it bleeds into the two for you and maybe that's the case for some others.
No, yeah, I feel like for me, like if my personal life is going well, I feel great. And there have been times where I can compartmentalize. Last year just wasn't one of those years, unfortunately.
I guess the one thing that I want to dive in first of all, and again, it's not to take away from everything else that's been going on. You know, this isn't the one deal that you've done for the quarter because ultimately you've had a really, really good start to the year, but you've just come off the back of a really successful auction. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about it a little bit and I want to dissect it. Okay. I want to also talk about later on in the episode, we'll talk about, you know, how you got into auction in the beginning, what your prospecting strategy is and a few different things, because I find it fascinating your ability to be as consistent as what you are and how good you are on the phone and all of that. You have a very consultative approach that I think a lot of people can learn from. But the thing that I want to focus on first of all is this auction that we had at Nelly Gale. So again, just from a recap perspective, I'm going to get this a little bit wrong. So forgive me, this is how raw it is, but we sold it for $1,790,000, correct?
Correct. Sells tomorrow. Closes tomorrow.
Oh, beautiful. And then our bidding to start from was?
$1 million.
$1 million. So a $790,000 increase. Now over how long did we have as a lead up? It was like 10 days, correct?
Yeah, it was 7 to 10 days. Originally, we were planning on giving it like the full 3 weeks, but there was so much activity in that first open house and so many people that were just like, I want to write up an offer, that that's when you and I had talked. And it was like, well, we've got an auction next week. Instead of having them write up offers, let's just get them registered. And for me, that was great.
Yeah, it's a really good point, like that we brought it forward. But I want to rewind on all of this because this is a really successful auction. We had over 25 registered bidders. There were, you know, I think about 7 or 8 that were represented by you. Is that right?
It was 10.
10. There you go. Perfect.
I was trying to know all those paddle numbers.
That's right. Well, I guess that I want to rewind. How did you get the opportunity for the listing?
So I, 4 years ago, was doing a lot of door knocking in Nellygale, and I had actually just been door knocking. I remember her son was running down the street. I hadn't even knocked on her house. And I remember thinking like, I really don't feel like talking to this person, but I should. And so I just like pulled him aside and I was like, I don't remember what I was trying to share at that point, something that had sold in the neighborhood. And he was like, oh, you should meet my mom. Like they've been talking about selling. And so that's how I met Sudie and her husband. And then it's just been a 4-year relationship because they haven't been ready. Helped them with some of their other properties, helped them lease a home in Laguna Beach. And then last year I'd signed the listing, but then they changed their minds about selling altogether. And then this year came back around and they were finally ready. So it's just, you know, it's the long game with some of these.
So that's a fascinating thing to just dive into. First of all, what did you talk to them about for 4 years? What did you do from a touch point perspective?
I mean, it was always just, it's with any of my past clients, it's just a quarterly phone call. So whether it was updating them on something that was happening around their Laguna Beach rental that they own, or it was just giving them an update on the market in Nellygale. And a lot of these people aren't answering the phone. It's just a voicemail. I mean, she's 80. I'm not texting her, but I'm leaving her a voicemail every quarter. And, that just keeps me on their radar. Or with clients like that, it's mailing the cards around the holidays or, you know, calling her on Mother's Day, little things like that, because I knew they were going to sell eventually. It's a 5,000 square foot house, her and her husband in their late 80s. There was no main floor bedroom. I knew that eventually they needed to downsize.
Yeah, you know, it's great. I think that long game element of things, Rach, is fascinating to see that it came from a cold perspective, mm-hmm. someone, their son literally running in the street and then in making an introduction, then you just staying in touch to build that relationship. That's, you know, I think that speaks volume because Nellygale is a pretty tightly held area for those that don't really know. Like there's some really solid agents in there that really own the territory, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's I remember when I first sat down with the owners and the Sudie, the woman who I've been primarily working with throughout this process, she didn't really take me seriously. Like I could tell she was skeptical. Like who is this young girl just sitting at my table? But I think just over time, the trust was earned and, that I think is what really helped me convert the business.
So that probably speaks to the fact that like, do you know if you were in competition to get the listing? I'm pretty sure that would have been one that they would have called you and said, hey, Rach, just come and sign it or no?
This time around, it was just to come and sign me. The 4 years ago when I first met, when they were thinking about selling, they were interviewing other agents and I would show up there and, you know, there'd be other package. People always do that. They leave things at the front door. It happened when I signed the listing, another agent had called her and I called him and I was like, hey, so what are you doing talking to my client? You brought her a buyer. It's under contract. It's signed with me. So that, yeah, it definitely happened a little bit.
Well, I think that just goes to show that ultimately the staying power and the building of that relationship can overcome anything from the perspective of competition. So that's awesome, first of all. But the next part of this property goes, I guess, talk to me about the conversation that you had with an 80-year-old lady and her husband, obviously. And I know her sister was in real estate up in Canada. So you had a lot of different voices in this. Talk to me how the conversation goes when you're suggesting auction, when they probably wouldn't even have thought about it.
So I think with this one, and I'm sure you can agree, it was a very unique property to say the least. And that's what everyone was saying. Truthfully, most people were saying this house doesn't belong in Nellygale. It was just very unique, very different than anything that had been sold in that neighborhood. Also, it unfortunately has a lot of deferred maintenance. They had plenty of equity, but they just didn't choose to put the money back into the house. So there was a lot of issues with the house from water leaks and broken windows, just tons of problems. So also given their age and their situation, they originally wanted to just find an investor and sell it off market. So I was doing that. I brought in maybe 3 investors, but the offers were coming in really, really low. I mean, these were just single party show agreements. Offers were coming in the low ones. And I told her, I was like, you know, with this sort of situation, we don't really know what your home is worth because we're not exposing it to someone who's going to buy it and live in it. We're exposing it to an investor. So I had just suggested, why don't we list it, get it on the market and just even for a weekend, see what people come back with. But then that still came back to, well, what price do we go on the market with? I mean, is this a teardown house? Are we comping this for a land value? Is it just the lot? And I don't think any of us fully knew. So to me, that's where it made the most sense to say, well, let's use auction. Let's list artificially low and hear from the market directly. And if you don't like what you're hearing, you don't have to sell. But I knew that she was going to sell. I knew it wasn't a waste of my time. I also think with all the problems in the house, I didn't want it to be a can of worms and people to find all that stuff out after. So that was also coming back to the process of doing the home inspection, doing termite, doing roof, and just sharing that with a buyer and saying, take it or leave it. Unfortunately, in Canada, I think that that's how they usually sell real estate. So her sister was on board. She was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. And they all actually loved the auction process. And then I showed them one of the YouTube videos of you auctioning off like one of the deals I'd done a while ago, and they loved that. So that was actually, I think you sealed the deal with.
Well, I guess I can say that firsthand is that they don't do it like that in Canada. So it was your perspective to persuade. So, but the thing that I'm curious about, so it sold for $1,790,000, and we'll get into all the different circumstances and all that a little later on, but what did you think it was worth, Rach? Like, again, like, I know that that's a question that normally I would never ask somebody, but what did you think the property could be worth? And again, being vulnerable here, like, what did realistic you think they could get?
I was basing it off of, because I had shared it with other people in the office. You know, I ran by, like, I talked to different people in the office that knew the area well, and then getting those investors in, I thought that we would be lucky if we got like 1.5. I thought we'd be really lucky if we got 1.6. Because yeah, I mean, that's what I personally thought. And so that's what I kept telling them. And I was like, I could be wrong. Let's hope that I'm wrong. But that's what we were all kind of expecting. So when the auction happened and we even got past 1.7, I mean, she started to tear up and was like crying happy tears when that happened.
That's good. That's good. And I think that just goes to show as well, is that but it can go on the other angle of things as well, is that we can have an assumption of value and, you know, it might not meet that mark. It's about really letting the marketplace speak. Isn't it funny how no one argues with the marketplace when it's over what they want, but they definitely will argue with it when it's less?
I know. It's obviously better to have an auction where you're having conversations in that direction. But had it been the other way, I also think the conversation would have been like, look, you guys had, we have 200 interested people in your home, right? There was almost 200 people that came through, and we have 20 plus registered bidders, and this is what they're saying the market's worth. How can you argue with that? And I think, just given that data and that information, they would have accepted it. But fortunately, it was over what they had expected it was worth.
Well, so I want to dive into the data element of things, because Rachel, the thing that I have to commend is your tenacity in order to actually make sure that you're going to get more business out of this as well. Yeah. Obviously, we're focused on the result for your client. That's what auction does. And that was going to happen from an automatic default perspective. Yeah. Even with the volume of interest, the way you cultivated it, it was going to absolutely happen. And your decision to bring the date forward absolutely was going to make sure they got the most money. But in the midst of all of this, you're running open houses where you're collecting every single person's name and number, and you're making sure that you're collecting data. Now, I may get the numbers wrong. I did have them in front of me, but now I've changed screens. But I think a total of 167 groups is what I saw total that you took everybody's names and numbers down, or was it more than that?
No, I think that was accurate. That sounds accurate. And then obviously people can go online and favorite the property. So when I go back to like the interest list that includes everything, it's 200. But yeah, there were 170 or so groups that had come through the open house.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a challenging thing. Someone's trying to talk to you and it's like, hey, look, I'm sorry, I'll talk to you after this. I've got to get them signed in. But no one really gave any pushback. And I think you and I have talked about it before. I find it the most accurate when I just have my computer in front of me and I'm asking for their information. I think people don't usually want to lie, but when you hand them a piece of paper, it's like, oh yeah, I messed up that number. People don't. Yeah. So I like to sign them in because I feel like I have more control.
So let's lean into that a little bit, because again, there's going to be people on this podcast that are external to the network and that are listening from outside going, what do you mean registering people or getting their information? So you made it not accessible outside of the open houses, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you made sure that there was one funnel of interest. Now I'm assuming that this was a champagne problem, of course, but you're standing at the front door, you've got your laptop, and somebody walks up and it's, hey there, my name's Rachel, what's your name? What is that process? You've got people lining up behind them. Are you having people trying to get past you? What's the situation, so to speak?
Yeah, I usually just kind of block the front door so they can't get past me. Or if they do, I just call them out in front of everybody. I'm like, hey, you walked past me, you can't come in the house unless I sign you in. And then if they start to give me pushback, I'm like, everybody else just signed in, you're not allowed to come in. And if they're like, oh, well, this isn't the house for me, I'm like, okay. And I just let them go. Like, I don't care, because if there's that much interest, it's simple. Just give me your name, give me your number, and then you can come in the house. I feel like I'm kind of blunt with it, but I'm also, you know, there's a smile on my face. I'm really friendly when I'm asking people. So I think I feel I'm fairly approachable and they're not too worried about it.
So when they come up and they're like, hey, you get name, you get phone number. Do you get anything else, or do you ask any other questions?
So like, if you were to come in, I'd be like, you know, what's your name? You'd say it's Ben. And then I'd ask if you're working with an agent. And if you're like, yeah, kind of, I'd say, okay, what is your agent's information? Should I get their number, or should I stick with yours and follow up with you? And then, you know, at that point you're like, oh, you know, yeah, here's my agent's number. Or you're like, just call me. And then I make a note underneath. Probably doesn't have an agent.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Rach. I love how you said that, though. Let's just focus on that for a second. Should I stick with your number, or should I get your agent's number?
Yeah.
That's really cool, because they're like, a lot of the time, I've got to be honest, is that the buyer is going to turn around and go, no, I want to talk to you about this property. Exactly. You know, don't get me wrong, there'll be some that say, here's my agent. But you do find out really quickly about what type of relationship do they have with the agent, or are they just telling you that they have one so that you don't follow them up or whatever it may be.
Absolutely. And then there's times where, because again, when you have that many people coming in, I can't be talking to you for a couple minutes, just because there's other people waiting behind you trying to get in. But what I'll do is, let's say you come back around and you're asking me more questions. I'll say, okay, can you remind me your name? And you'll tell me that I can search it on my end. And so if you start to mention something, I'll update my notes. Like, there were a handful of people that did that. And then I would talk to them like, oh, you own a house in Mission Viejo, you're thinking about selling. Let me just pull up your information so I can follow up with you. What's the address? And I don't beat around the bush, because I don't think people really care. Like, they're either going to say, sorry, I'm not comfortable. But I think a lot of us feel weird about doing that. And it's like, well, why? They'll either say yes or no. And if they say yes, you have a lot more information, because otherwise I'm going back to my computer that evening. I'm sending the name and the phone number to my title rep, and they're giving me that information when I could have just asked the person. And I find if you're willing to give me your address, you're probably not that loyal to another agent. So it's all just kind of more information I'm getting.
It's so interesting. I had somebody the other day say the complete opposite, right? And they said, well, I don't even ask them for information. I sort of just open the door and I just let them go. And if they really want to call me, they can just call me. And it's like, how much business would that person actually miss out on? Like, realistically, like, just from being lapsadaisy with everything, like, it just doesn't make a great deal of sense. But I want to go back to this, is that you've got 167 people's information. Out of that, like, again, we kind of went through it a little bit, but how many of that would you say were unrepresented buyers / possible future sellers?
Well, out of unrepresented buyers, I would say, I think looking at it, I felt like it was like 60 to 70% of people didn't have an agent. I was really surprised on this one, how many people came through. And I don't know if that has anything to do with the upcoming changes and people are just feeling like, I have no idea what's causing that, or if that was just unique to this house, but most of them didn't have agents. And then in terms of the seller leads, so far I've probably spoken with, I would say, at least 10 people that do have a house that they need to sell at some point. I don't necessarily think they're all now sellers, but I shared with you earlier, I just left a house in Nellie from someone that I met at the open house who's remodeling it right now and wanted my opinion on value. And then at 4 o'clock today, I'm going up to meet with someone in Irvine who came through the open house. You know, he owns a house on Balboa, he owns a house in Irvine, lives in Mission Viejo. It's like, if you have one of these houses, odds are you have a couple more as well. So that's one person can end up being like two or three listings down the line.
Isn't it amazing though, Rach, is that you proved over the last 4 years, okay, with Sudie and her husband, that you're able to do the staying power. So the ultimate thing is that I'm going to probably say that out of those 10 people that have properties to sell, and let's say they all on average just have one property to sell, you're going to get 8 out of those 10 opportunities, which is incredible to sort of put into the bank. And again, I say opportunities because the business is not won immediately, you know, at the end of the day, that you still might have to compete against it or whatever it may be. But all you need for somebody like yourself is the opportunity to talk to them about real estate, to give them that impressive element.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I don't know, you know, when I'll convert all of those, but my goal is to convert as many as I can. And to me, it is a long play. I mean, I feel like that's the cool part now, is that I'm seeing things that I created 5 years ago start to turn into something today, which is really exciting.
And that's where I think the exciting part of your business and how I would respond if someone said, hey, why is Rachel doing so well at the beginning of this year? I really do believe it's your past business that you've actually really nurtured, because we will get into the cold prospecting element of things shortly. But the thing I want to stay focused on, though, is that the collection of that data and the data mining that you've been through is something that it's funny. People might be thinking, oh, does Rachel only, did she only do it on this one because there was so much interest? But no, you've done this in all of your auctions, and you do it in a sense in your traditional listings as well when you release those also. Data capture has been something that you've done from the very onset of your business. And do you think that that's probably one of the significant ways that you've been able to create a repeat and referral business like what you've got at the moment so quickly?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, that was like when I first joined Harcourts in 2017, everyone was like, you just got to have a database and you've just got to keep all that information. Now I'm getting to the point where when I make calls, I'll kind of be like, okay, I've had this person for a really long time. Like, am I holding on to this contact for too long? And I've been trying to kind of clean it out a little bit. But yeah, something that I think I just prioritize is making sure that I have everyone in one place and that I'm following up with them, whether it's quarterly or depending on if it's a lead, is that every 2 weeks? Is that every month? And that's really important to me.
Can you take me through this from an auction perspective? I want to go through this with you because I actually just spoke to somebody just before. How did you respond? Because most of the time with our auction process, you'll get a lot of people that will try and put offers in to stop the auction beforehand, right? Mm-hmm. What did you say to people like when they were placing offers and we made a decision that we're just going to go to auction day? What did you say to, like, did people still submit offers? And when they did submit offers, what did you say to say, hey, you're going to just register to bid? We're going to give you that opportunity. Because the reason I'm bringing that up is the conversation I just had. There's this property that, and again, I'll just leave the names out of it, is that they had 40 people through the open house on the weekend. You know, the bidding to start from is tremendous, but they're like, oh, we've got all these offers and I want to accept this one prior to auction. I'm like, you've got 7 offers. Like, why don't we take it to auction? The auction's only next week. Like, why don't we take it to auction? They're like, oh no, but what if we miss out? And what if these people like don't sign up? And all of these emotions are probably real and you probably had those. What gave you the level of confidence though, Rach, to say no and to move it all the way through?
You know, it's a good question. I think with this one, it was almost like not overthinking it and just running the process and sticking to it. That's all I can say with this, because people came in and it was kind of like, I mean, one, it saves, like, getting all those offers. I hate looking through agents writing offers. I'm like, they made such a mess of things. It's just a pain. And I'm like, they're missing this. They're missing the proof of funds. Like, it's just annoying, honestly. So it was kind of nice to be like, look, don't waste your time submitting an offer. This is going to auction. The seller will make a decision. Either they will accept an offer on auction day or will continue to progress and they'll try it again next week. So people were, I think just because when people come into a listing and they see the word auction, they assume that there's going to be an auction. Usually we're explaining, hey, this is somewhat like a traditional sale. You can submit an offer to stop the auction. So I don't think it really surprised people when I was like, yeah, don't worry about writing an offer. Just get registered to bid. And that was fine. And then people were registering really fast. And I think the peace of mind for me was that I knew with at least the first 3 or 4 registered bidders that they were solid buyers. So I wasn't concerned if 10 other people didn't get registered, which maybe isn't great, but I knew that I had enough of the strong buyers that I was like, that's my priority. I've got a handful of good registered bidders. But I honestly think everyone we had registered was willing to pay over the seller's reserve price. So that was really cool to see.
I think that that's, you know, isn't it amazing? Like, I've got to be honest, is that some of the best auctions that we have, okay, and that we have had over the last little while, not including yours, because yours was by design that you sort of were like, okay, let it go. Let's just do the process the way it works. But I've got to be honest, there's a couple of properties here that I had an auction today actually, where the agent was like checked out essentially and just was like, oh, I'm just going to do what you guys tell me to do with the auction process, and just was kind of checked out. And it worked out amazingly for them. Whereas somebody that's getting in the way of trying to provoke things and trying to make decisions and all that stuff beforehand, it turns into a shit show most of the time.
Yeah.
So again, good learning.
No, it's interesting because I didn't know where you were going to go with saying that person was checked out, because I could see it going, you know, either way. So.
It can if there's no interest at all and you need to educate your sellers. There's no question.
I was going to say, I think that was to my advantage, is that, I mean, there was education there going into auction. It was like, okay, look, this is, I never inflated the expectation. I had a feeling that it was going to go higher than what we all thought once we got the registered bidders. But I didn't tell that to my clients, because what if I was wrong? Then all I did was, the sale was already emotional enough for them. So if I put a false expectation out there, and that was something that you and I talked about before auction, it's not misleading them. It's just like, why would I put something out when I don't actually have proof of it? Because I didn't have any offers. I just had a gut feeling based on the conversations I was having. But my conversations to the seller were still like, hey, let's be prepared that this is where this is going to land. And obviously, my opinion wasn't going to change the outcome. So it was just important that they got to see it firsthand and I didn't inflate the...
Well, here's my perspective of that. If you didn't inflate it, let's say you did inflate it, okay, when you got to $1,790,000, they probably would have been like, oh yeah, I expected that.
Yeah.
But she had tears in her eyes when it was going over 1.6 because you chose to make sure you put an insurance policy on underselling the property. You know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest mistakes in real estate is that we don't adjust the seller's expectation just for the sake of it. And when you get the market value, they don't really appreciate market value. So again, I think that was a great thing that you did. But where I want to segue to just so I can make sure that we get all of this done, at the end of the day, we had a live auction. Rachel, there was a lot of phone calls leading up to it. There's a lot of obviously real heavy work from you, but the one thing was 10 out of the 25 registered bidders were unrepresented buyers. Your buyer ended up being the top running buyer from that perspective at $1,790,000. Okay. So you got to double end that deal at the same time as everybody else. But the thing that where I feel so good about this situation is it wasn't manipulated. There was nothing manipulated. There was nothing like, oh, my buyer's here and I get paid more commission, so we should accept that one. We had a level of certainty with your client because we knew who they were. We knew that they could perform and everything along those lines. There was no smoke and mirrors behind the scenes. We just let it play out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I felt really good with all of, because as we know, auction day can get really chaotic, and especially when you have 10 buyers registering, like you want to know that that person's going to be committed to the outcome. So it was important to me that prior to auction, because I think anyone listening, it's like the auction process is a lot of work. I mean, I probably spent, you know, the days leading up to auction, it's like, that's my priority for those couple of days is this house. And of course, there's other things going on, but it's like, all right, well, I got to get through this interest list. And that might take me 5 or 6 hours. But if I want the best outcome for my client, I'm going to put in that legwork. Also knowing it's simultaneously prospecting and getting listing leads. So it's like killing two birds with one stone. But yeah, coming back to the auction day, before auction happened, I mean, I had sent out an email the night before making sure that every unregistered buyer knew the expectations the seller had in terms of no contingencies, the rent back, those details. And then that morning, I also, again, I thought of it kind of like prospecting, like all these people own houses. And so it's getting on the phone and it's just saying, hey guys, you know, we're going into auction today. How are you feeling? Do you have any questions? To recap, did you get my email? And so for me, again, it was forming that initial or that extra layer of trust. But I was also making notes next to every single unregistered bidder of their feedback, like this person, you know, I just wanted to know that when we got to that top buyer, I could tell my seller a little bit about that buyer too. Because when you have that much interest, realistically, that can be a little bit hard.
Yeah, I think it was a very, what's the right word? It was a curated result from yourself by making sure that you strategically played it in the correct manner. So again, big congratulations on all of that. I'm glad it's closing tomorrow. Again, there was never any doubt because we knew that buyer could perform. But again, one thing that we're going to make sure that in the show notes, we're going to link the actual live auction itself so people can actually see. From an auction perspective, I didn't have to do much in the beginning of it. People were just bidding without me even provoking them. It was amazing.
That was crazy. Right? Didn't you say like it shut down the auction for a second?
It did. We actually literally, it broke the platform for a minute and then we had to come back and restart it all because of the volume. A lot of people were
calling me and texting me like, is this supposed to be happening? And I was like, fix it, Ben.
That's right. But leading away from that, I just want to go back to the grassroots of thing, Rach, because again, this isn't your first auction. I would say that you've probably done in excess of what, 30 auctions now, maybe even more, or been involved in that many? Let's just say a lot. Okay. But the one thing I would say is that you've been a bit of a believer in it, whether it's the process or whether it's the prospecting advantage that it gives you from day one. You started off just cold calling. That's all you were doing. So let's talk about your early days in real estate and how you got over the hurdle of the cold prospecting element and how auction might have helped you do that.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, it's just funny because I was so miserable at first and wanted to quit so much along the way, but I'm really glad I stayed. The first couple of years were hard though. But I think at this point, cold prospecting does not faze me. Like the only reason that it's ever something I'm like, oh, I have to go do that is because it's not like the most fun thing to do, but there's never like anxiety leading into it. It is what it is. It's just like, okay, you know, I should go do this thing, you know? So it's just kind of how I think about it. But the auction process, for me, the biggest value in it is I don't like false starts with deals. I hate when you get into escrow and it cancels. Like, it's just, to me, I'm like, can we just get this sold and have it done? I'm kind of like a check the box type of person. Like, I want to have the deals and I want to check them and then they're done. And I'm still like, you know, nurturing the client and all that stuff, but it's done and behind me. So I really don't like going into a deal and it falling out, going in and it's falling out. I don't think anybody does. But to me, the biggest value with auction is that you avoid all of that for the most part, right? I mean, it can still happen, but I want to create reassurance for my clients. And I had a client traditionally a couple weeks ago where the deal fell out of escrow and he was like, Rachel, is there any money I get to keep? Like, was there any kind of insurance policy? And I was like, well, they submitted their earnest money deposit, but they had a 7-day contingency that you agreed to. And he couldn't wrap his head around that. And I think coming back to auction, because we do everything up front, we're putting ourselves in a position where it's like, if you guys really want this house, we're giving you everything that you would see in escrow. I mean, even on this one, we ordered HOA docs in advance. So it's like, do your due diligence in these next few days and make a strong offer. And I think that just how I'm explaining it is how I would sell it to a client because I believe so strongly in that.
Well, I think that there's another part of this that people don't get to see maybe, but bleeding over into your traditional business, I think that you are a far superior agent on a traditional sense of the way that you operate just from your early days with auction because you take the principles of what that is. And I've seen you put that into your traditional listings as well, just based on the nature of using it, that if the client doesn't want to go auction or the circumstances don't work for auction, we don't have to use auction in a traditional sense. You can use the principles of it, however, in the way that you operate.
Absolutely.
But I really do believe that from a case study perspective as an individual agent, I think that you are somebody that has gone through it all, Rach, from the cold prospecting to the now nurturing your own client sphere to now, you know, leveraging the data element in order to get more business and accelerate your business quicker. I think that all of those elements to watch that is something that people should really strive for. You may not feel that way now or didn't last year, but at the same time, I think that you're the complete business, you know, in a way that people should look like.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And hopefully I won't have any more ebbs and flows. I think that's kind of the natural part of it, but that's just how it goes, I guess.
So let's talk about, as we round out the episode, as I put you on the spot when we first were starting this as well, but favorite podcast, books that you might be your favorite or that you might have read that you like, and then maybe a life hack as well. Okay. So give me podcasts. What's your favorite podcast?
You should have given me more of a heads up on that. Am I supposed to say Rethink Real Estate?
No, absolutely not. I hate that shit. You know, when someone says that, I'm like, I know for a fact that you've never listened to an episode.
I have listened to it before. Okay. But my favorite podcast, have you listened to the Jay Shetty podcast?
Oh, yeah, I do. I love Jay Shetty.
He's my favorite. That's my favorite podcast. I was listening to it today. So that's
Can I ask though? Mm-hmm. I found that he's gotten I can't tolerate him as much because have you ever seen him when like a celebrity's on with him, how he just kisses their ass for the first 10 minutes? It's a love fest. Mm-hmm. It bothers me.
I can see that a little bit. So yes, I can see that. So should I have a second follow-up for my podcast?
Please.
Can I open my podcast app and see what
Go. This is raw. This is perfect.
This one is on purpose. That was what I was listening to.
Oh. Surely you've got a couple that you listen to on a daily, like when you're paddleboarding or whatever it is.
I mean, I like TED Talks. Like that's one of my recent ones.
Have you listened to a TED Talk that you liked? Not to put you on the spot, but.
Yeah, you're really putting me on the spot. Yes, definitely have. But if I knew like the most, I don't have a name off the top of my head.
Well, TED Talks are good. TED Talks are great. I love the concept that they give.
So the daily, that's one of them.
Do you listen to this? I'm curious whether or not you do. What is it? Smartless? Do you listen to Smartless?
No, I don't know that one.
You and I'll talk offline about that. Okay, it's like that's like my guilty pleasure. Like when I go for a run or something like that, it's like, I'm going to listen to this, which is just complete shit that I don't learn anything from, but it's hilariously entertaining.
See, I feel like I'm almost too hard on myself. I'm like, if I listen to a podcast, I feel like I have to learn something.
And yeah, that's I feel the same way.
Yeah, which is kind of sad because I feel like it takes some of the fun out of it. But even for books, I'm like, oh, it's like got to be a book that like makes me better. Or like everyone always tells you a book to read and then I'll order it on Amazon. And I'm just like, well, I haven't read that yet. But I feel better because I have it in my house.
So give me some of the books that you have in your house that you might have read.
Okay. No, I can give you one that I've read. Are you familiar with Eckhart Tolle?
You haven't
heard of A New Earth or The Power of Now?
Oh, sorry. Do you know what? Yes. And the only reason I'd heard of it, because a guest, like three guests before you, okay, they'd mentioned that. Is it a guy that's an early philosopher? In the 1920s or 30s or?
Maybe. No, well, I don't know, because he's still alive.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
He's pretty old. But his books are really good. It's just kind of the idea of like being present. And I think my biggest takeaway with his books is just like, if you can't change your situation, you kind of just got to accept it. And that usually it's not the situation itself that's bothering you. It's your thoughts around it. And I think there's a lot of power behind that. So that's my key takeaway from his book.
Boom. Well, that could be the life hack as well, unless you can think of something else.
Yeah, I think that,
man. That's it? I like the one that you said before, is that you don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah. What's the point?
That's funny.
That probably sums it up.
Oh, yeah. I think we all take ourselves too seriously at some point, but at the same time, I think you do a good job of not.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, hey, look, I appreciate the journey so far, Rach. Looking forward to the remainder that is going to be a long, illustrious career. So we appreciate your full experience and everybody getting to see that on Rethink Real Estate.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.